Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World of Ink Network, founded in 2011 by Virginia Grenier and Marcia Cook. Their vision was to start a radio show that helped writers reach their dreams. The World of Ink has a wonderful group of hosts who are dedicated to delivering shows to entertain and inspire listeners. The World of Ink Network shares resources that introduce tips, products, and services to help strengthen, support, and challenge those who love writing and the written word. Their hope is to bring not only authors, illustrators, and publishers together, but screenwriters, directors, and producers. New to the network will be a variety of special shows, bringing not only entertaining shows, but informative discussions on timely subjects. To learn more about us, go to www.worldofinknetwork.com or visit us on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. Hi, it's Marcia Cook, and it's A Good Story is a Good Story on the World of Ink Network, and we have a great guest, Jack Remick, today, and he'll be joining us in a few seconds. I have a couple messages that I thought maybe everybody would like to hear, that if you're interested in wanting to be on the radio as far as being an assistant for Virginia and myself, so we can do more chats and we can open up the phone lines more. We always did that on Red River, and we always had assistants. So if there's anybody out there listening, just contact Virginia or myself. And you don't have to talk, because a lot of people don't want to be on the air. So you don't have to do that. You can just be in the chat room and on the phones, or you can talk. You know, Bethany Cross used to do that, with, as that we all remember, and I had so many other people that were with me years ago. But things have changed. Everybody's busy, but I would hope that somebody would want to do this, because we're eager to have someone so we can open up our chat more. And, okay, let's see what else. All right, next week we have the Naughty Nights people, and it's going to be great because Gina will be here with them. And we have a couple shows, another show after that. And they always have so much going on. And Gina's a lot of fun. And so we'll have about six people on. Or, as you know, we could have more when Gina comes on. And we're going to have another show in March with her also. And we're also going to have a Valentine's show. The shows are on Tuesday. And I think we're going to go back to a permanent 8 o'clock at night on Central Time. But as anybody knows who's listened to me for the last 600 or 700 shows, that I do happen to change my mind sometimes, and that's why we're on this afternoon. Virginia was going to join us, but she can't today. And I have a new book coming out, so I think I better say that, because I never get that in Grand Central Station, and I love this book, and I don't usually say much about it, but this was from a screenplay that was optioned years ago at Lifetime, and at that time, Lifetime really didn't do romantic comedies, but they liked it enough to option it, but now, they still don't do very many romantic comedies, but, so I made it into a book, and I changed it around a little bit. Well, if you ask my editor, I changed it around a lot, but I really like it. It's a short, fast, fun read, and hopefully everybody will like it, and you'll let me know. Okay, and let's see what else I wanted to say here. Oh, yes, we are doing a lot of advertising on Blog Talk, and Judy and Gil Snyder, who have been on before, they both are authors, but they now took on the joy of songwriting, and Invincible is their song, and it's on, it's actually on Virginia, and either of our sites, and it's on our World of Ink Network. You can click in to go into iTunes, and it's doing very well. Kelly Abell has done some of the banners, and they look great. So they're out there doing some different things. I mean, everybody changes it up a little, you know, and as everybody knows, I change it up quite a bit. But I have someone on today. We're going to have a great time. It's Jack Remick and myself. And so, Jack, hi, Jack. How are you?
Hello. Hi, Marcia. How are you doing today?
It's so great to have you.
Thank you for asking me.
Because you really know a lot about everything. Do you want to tell everybody exactly what you do, because you have do so many things besides your blog for you and Bob.
I love it. I love it to be sold like that, you know. Yeah.
Well,
okay, I'm a,
you are
I'm
so
a novelist
interesting.
I'm a novelist and a poet. I write, you know, short stories. I have a couple collections of short stories and a couple books of poetry and a bunch of novels. I also write some memoir. An interesting thing about that is last 3 or 4 years I have been going over to the League of Utah Writers to run some workshops, and I had a real nice interaction with a writer over there named Star Coolbrook, who happens to be the poet laureate of Logan, and
wow.
She runs a reading series called Helicon West, and I was a featured poet over there 1 year, and I got a call the other day for they wanted to put together an anthology of the featured readers on their Helicon West series, and I was thinking, you know, I haven't published any memoir since 1 year in the Time of Violence, and so I sent something off to her, and I was really happy with it because it's a real accessible piece of writing. I'm glad I wrote it. I'm glad that she liked it, and I'm glad that it'll be coming out. So that's the range that I cover. You know, I do a little bit of teaching now and then. I don't hold many, you know, formal classes anymore.
But you do a lot in Seattle, though. I mean, you do a lot of things. You know, you have your group that you are a part of.
Yeah. Those are the kind of, you know, what I like to do these days, Marcia, is a sort of a one-on-one with other writers instead of doing a whole class. What I found the last time, well, you know my writing partner, Bob Ray.
Yes,
We taught together for years. And
we even
just
had him on the show. I'd love to have him on again, but I know he wasn't thrilled. It's hard to get him
know,
on, but he always has an open invitation.
Yeah, well, he just published his 7th mystery, you know. I mean, he's...
Maybe he'll
want to
come
still,
on. I'll ask.
Still cranking him out. It's called... let me get the title exactly for you. It's called Murdoch Rocks Sedona. He set his last two novels over there in Arizona, you know, making... had one in Taos and now one in Sedona. Anyway, he and I were teaching this class on writing practice. And what I find is that I get so anxious that my readers or my students aren't getting what we're saying that I tend to amp up. And so I start moving very fast. And this makes it almost impossible for me to run a decent class anymore. So what I prefer is a sort of one-on-one with other writers, and they get a lot more out of it, and I can set the pace, and I don't have to worry about a lot of...
Well, anybody you've always sent to the show, you know, that we've had on has been so interesting. I mean, because you do gravitate toward very interesting people, not just the same old, same old. They're very interesting.
Yeah.
And that's what you do best. I mean, because you have been doing this for, you know, a few years here and there, and you are, I call you an expert. You don't think you are, but you are. And one
well,
of the things
nice
that I
can
think
I add
you
that
are,
to my resume?
Yes, you can. You can put it in that I said it, but that doesn't mean anything.
It, yeah.
I don't think that'll help you sell anything, because that's what we're going to talk about for a minute. Okay, you and I have had conversations, and I've talked about this. And, you know, I think one of the problems for authors is that they write a book, and they're not selling as well as they thought they were going to. But they still wrote a book, and I think one of the most important things is that they have to write a good story and get that out. And, you know, as far as selling, what do you... Because I know people ask you that, because they're asking you, how do you get to sell a lot of books? There's not, I wish there was a answer, or a magic wand. One or the other would be good.
Yeah, well, you know, I've run into that a lot with younger writers. Let me tell you who I've been working with sort of at a distance. I don't know if you met or have had on your show a young writer named Max Everhart. He lives in South Carolina.
No.
He's written some very interesting mysteries. And, you know, he signed on with Camel Press here in Seattle, and they published his books. And he's kind of running into that whole issue of, my books aren't selling as fast as I wanted them to. And that, I think that's just a dilemma of the publishing world right now, Marcia.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it's it has to do with any one writer. I think
I don't think it does have to do with the writer. And I think Amazon,
though, things are.
Do you know that I think on February 3rd, they're supposed to be, Amazon is, I don't know how they're attempting to do this, but they're going to take off some authors that shouldn't be on there. I mean, they've let every, you know, I think over the years, I mean, I don't know the last, I don't know how many years, it's been a long time since Amazon has been out. And I think what they did is everybody could publish and, you know, with CreateSpace, but I think they must be having issues now with people's books not being very good or edited, or there's a lot of things, and I guess they get complaints. So on February 3rd, I think they're going to be checking. I don't really know how they're going to do this, but I've seen several messages about it. But I think that there is a problem with that now, because there are so many people. I mean, not that a lot of people didn't write before, but as you know, I was a literary agent, and I had such great clients. I mean, you know, Marcus Bryan, when I opened it, I wanted to help new writers, so I had a lot of new writers. I had over 100 at a time, and they were so, I mean, everybody, I read all of their work at that time, because I didn't want anything to go out that I didn't read. And we had great writers.
That's part of the issue in the writing world, is that when Amazon opened up that floodgate there of publication, everybody, you know, who had that book they'd been wanting to write, they wrote it. And there wasn't very much quality control.
Right.
So a lot of work goes out that, you know, probably went out too early. I'm not sure that it's bad work. It's just that it went out too early. And I have friends here in Seattle who are editors, and they, you know, pay a lot of attention to those kinds of things. So if writers can learn to work with an editor instead of doing it all themselves, then we might not have that quality problem that you're talking about with Amazon. But, you know, the world has changed. Over here, they just opened Amazon. They is, you know, just opened their first brick-and-mortar store in one of the big shopping malls.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so
how does it, how is it there? I mean, when you go in, is it big?
Gigantic. So they come on, and they drive out, in a way, all the independent booksellers, and now they are opening up their own brick-and-mortar store, where it's a walk-in with books on the shelf. So there's the world is changing, and it's changing very, very fast. I think writers are caught in that pinch of not knowing which direction to go. Do you get an agent? Do you try to get a New York house? Do you go local? Do you do it yourself? There are so many options now, straight up and down the line, that it's very, very difficult to find a direction to go in. Let me give you an example. I've also been working off and on with a young writer over in, I think she's in Boulder, Colorado. Her name is Nicole Disney. She wrote a fascinating book, first novel, called Dissonance in A Minor. And I liked it so much that I wrote a review of it. She's taken all kinds of risks, and it's just a wonderful novel. She just wrote her second novel. It's called Don't Tell. And she is trying a different approach. So what she has done is she's of that age, of a cohort they call the millennials.
Yeah.
And so she has, content of her book is in a way very alien to me, because, you know, I come from a literary background. She comes from a blood and guts background of duking it out in the millennial world. So the themes and stories in her novel are just fascinating to me. And this may be something that's happening as more millennials get better aid to do what they're doing. I think we might see a change in the content of novels. I'm just really excited about her books.
I'd say everyone that I've met that you've introduced me to is a very, very good writer, you know. Mm-hmm. I think we have a question here. Oh, yes, we do have a question. Okay, I'll be right with you with the question. Okay, I think, you know, and anybody you have ever introduced me to is very literary, and they work hard at their craft. I think we're going to, one thing I want to talk about right after we take the person that is in the, in our chat room, I wanted to talk about rejections, because I think that's a problem, because I think if you've never gotten a rejection, it's not a good idea to be. You have to have those behind you. Then you realize, you know, and I think a lot of people out there don't have rejections and they don't have that filter. They think, oh, yeah, I'm okay. I wrote a book. But when you get a lot of rejections, it keeps you writing. I think it helps you write better because you realize what you've written needs work, and I think a lot of people don't do that. So let's. The question we have here is, can you please tell me what the word count or character count is for the promo page for upcoming shows? That's for me.
Okay.
Oh, that's for me. Okay, that was for me. Okay, they don't give us a word count. You can email me or call me or... we can talk after the show. Well, I'm going on Red River after the show. But if you you can email me through World of Ink, or you can email me or Facebook me, Marcia Casper Cook, and I will answer that. Because I think for the ads, if you're thinking about the ads, or they haven't put anything on. As long as the ad, you know, is the right size. And a lot of times the banners are a right size for advertising. So we can talk about that, and you know, and we'll be interested to talk to you and what you had in mind. So thank you, Gail. Okay. Let's talk about rejection for a minute or two.
All right. Well, let me tell you.
I know
you
everybody has them. I mean, most of us have them.
Sure. Yeah, I have a whole range of rejection notices up and down the line. You know, one woman, I forget her name, she was an agent in New York. I sent her a novel, and she said, "You really write well. I like your language, but this is the most sickening novel I've ever read in my life." Yeah, you know, well, that was...
They said that to you?
That was pretty exciting. And then a poet friend of mine back in the day when they still published in magazines, he told me that he got one acceptance for every 300 submissions. Well, that's very interesting. For a while, I worked with a screenwriter named Stuart Stern, and he told me that if I told my students how hard it is, they would never even try it. In other words, rejection is such a major part of living the life of a writer that you have to take all of your rejection notices and put them in a folder and never read them after that, but just keep writing. Because I think somebody once said that the successful writer is someone who persists, you know.
Yeah.
One way to be a successful is persist. And then what happens is maybe you outlive all the competition.
Yeah.
They all die off and you're left there. You
well,
know,
unfortunately,
with all
most of the clients that I had, they don't write anymore. They don't, I know. Don't. Maybe that's why we're still here. But, you know, the thing is, you know, it does, look, I remember when I first started and I was reading the writer's magazines, I was writing everything, and every time I was just about to just go, oh, I'm not doing this, I would read an article and say, I can do this. I did it, you know, and I kept going on, and now I just am too far into it to go out of it because I love it. It's so much a part of my life. You know, I've done, like, over 600 or 700 shows, and I still love it because I love to talk to writers, and I like to see how they're, because everybody I've talked to, no matter how many times you and I have talked or I've talked to my guests, I always learn something. And I think one of the problems is that a lot of the writers, we've talked about this lately a lot more, is that a lot of writers, they don't think they have to learn anything. And then it's time for them to put the pen away and the computer away and move on. You have to learn. You know, you do. It's just so many new things have occurred. And, you know, I mean, some of those things that have occurred, I mean, yes, everybody meets each other on the social media, and it is good. However, it becomes a full-time job and frustrating to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that might be me or you. Which one of us?
One of the things I run into is writers who want to talk about their work. You know, the book that they're in. And I have I will talk about a book, but not until I have a draft or until, you know, I have everything done, basically, because it seems to me that that the words want to get out. And let me be a little bit mystical here, but the words want to get out. And if you get them out in conversation, you know, then everything after that is sort of, you know, warmed over milk, you know, or spaghetti. And it's not as fresh and as sharp. So I sometimes counsel writers, you know, don't talk it out, write it out.
I don't talk to any of my friends about it.
Yeah, and write and write and write. Yeah, don't talk about it.
Well, the thing is, you know, how do you know it's going to turn out right? How do you know how it's going to turn out right? I mean, you don't really, you start with an idea, but that doesn't mean that it's even going to be close to what you think it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I tell writers, you know, come to writing practice, you know, where we write for 45 minutes. Write that, you know, 2 days a week for 45 minutes, type it up, go back home, work it again, come back the next day and write, you know, write some more. Because if you commit yourself to the writing, you actually get material that then eventually builds into a book. But before you can even rewrite a book, you've got to written it. Before you can edit it, you have to write it. You see, so, it's the writing, not the talking, that matters, you know.
So, you know, and I do think, you know, it, no matter how many times we write, you know, and I work with the same editor, Jeff Fleischer, and this time we had many conversations on Grand Central, and I kept saying to him, look, no matter how many times you're going to tell me something, and you are going to tell me something a million times, because I am not, it's not sinking in my brain. I'm not an editor, okay? And I just, if you keep talking to me, I'll never write another word again, because I can't keep thinking about everything. I just have to get that story out. And if I think about tone or what's happening, I can't write then, because I'm so busy thinking about the right way to write, everything will be the wrong way for me.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, I have also, you know, my life is filled with little sayings, you know, like the art is in the rewrite.
Right.
You know, those kinds of things. So one of the things that I keep bumping up against, you know, that young writers do is they only read other writers' fiction. You know, now that's well and good. I mean, we have to read each other's fiction. I read a lot of fiction, you know, and I write reviews of it and stuff like that. But what I'm finding is a lot of writers don't know where they came from. You know, I mean, it's like every generation has to invent its own wheel. Okay, that's good. But the thing is, all wheels are going to be round. So what you have to do as a writer is figure out what the minds of the people who preceded you were doing, and so you have to read some deep stuff. I encourage writers to read anthropology and linguistics and science. It's really important to be knowledgeable about the current state of science. Even if you're not an expert, you still need to know something about what's going on, because if you look at what's happening in the neurosciences right now, so much information is coming into the world about how the brain works, what happens when you write. The actual process of writing seems to change the brain, that it does things that you didn't know you were doing. And so the person who writes the third book is not in any way, shape, or form the person who wrote the first book. So you see, if you're not keeping up with the science that's in the world, you're pretty much falling behind. And this is the fate, I think, of young writers. You know, they read whoever it is and say, I just read Grisham's latest book. It's really great. Will that mean you're going to write like Grisham? What's he doing? Yep. What does he know about? You see, I mean, it's very important, and I can't stress it enough to the writers I work with. Read Jung. Read Levi Strauss. You know, read these guys whose brains were really amped up when they were seeing things and hearing things that can teach you what to be as a writer. One of the most important books that I have ever read is called Crowds and Power by Elias Canetti. He's a Viennese writer. He won the Nobel Prize. It is not about writing, but there's more in there that a writer can learn about writing than in all the writing books that have ever existed. It's just
true. You know, that's what I used to do. What I used to do when I first started writing was I used to go to the library, like, let's say children's books, and I would sit in the children's section, and I would take about 25 or 30 books, and I would just read them. And then while I was reading them, my own ideas started to come through. But I did that all the time, and I went all the time. And actually, it was a really good way to – I wasn't copying anything, because I just – my characters, I don't copy anybody's, because I don't even know where they come from. None of us do that are writers. But it just kept me – it kept my head moving, you know, my brain thinking. And then I just automatically put the books aside, and something came out. You know, not the whole finished book, but I would read. You know, it's very difficult now. There's so many things that keep us from writing. Now, You know, and that's one of the bad things. I think, you know, a lot of things, like even sometimes I talk to myself about the fact I have Netflix, I have cable, you know, and then I have Audibles, and I'm thinking, like, when am I going to have time to watch all these and listen to all these and write? Because, you know, you start with, let's say, the Netflix, and then now there are a lot of good series on. So you start watching them, and then you have to watch, like, 20 episodes. Then you go, like, what happened to the day, night, you know? And so sometimes you have to say to yourself, and I was one that always watched TV, listened in the background. But so now, I've mentioned this before, I put on something I've seen, like, 100 times. And I don't have to even – I need something to hear that's going on, but I don't have to watch it. But I need to have something in the room with me. So I put on things I've seen like 5 million times. I've seen, you know, like Bridges of Madison probably, I don't know, 50 times. I keep watching these things. But I think that's what's happening. There's a lot of distractions. And when I don't want any distractions, I go to a coffee shop, and not even in my office. And I just go to a coffee shop and I just sit there and I start writing without doing my email and looking at all that. We didn't have that years ago. You know, the email and the social media does take up time. And I might add one thing that I'm doing a lot of tests now because I'm trying a lot of different things. I'm trying the social media with Sprout Social, which is a good way to get things out. But I'm trying a lot of things and I want to see what's good and what isn't. Because, frankly, after all of this, I still think it's probably too much, and I think what I've been doing is trying to figure out how not to keep being on social media and writing more, because I think that takes over a lot of time.
Let me make a suggestion. What happens if you have a computer that isn't connected to the internet that you use?
I know. I said that to my husband, and I was going to do that, and that's exactly what I did. And then I changed my mind, and then I hooked it to the internet. That was what I was going to do because I was going to say, fine, just. But I write a lot of times by longhand. What I do is I just write notes and I write things out. And then when I come to the computer, it turns out differently, but at least I have some idea, so I never sit there and go, like, what am I going to write? Because I already know what I might write. I want to ask you a question. I was talking to Virginia, and Virginia was talking about outlines, and she's been listening to James Patterson. He has a series. Do you write with an outline?
Well, Bob and I over the years have developed some techniques for getting out story that, to me, an outline doesn't mean anything.
Okay, so how do you do it?
Well, I spend a lot of time, as I call it, writing about the writing. You know, I'm going to, instead of going right away into character or story, I start writing about what I want to write about. Who am I, you know, what is this going to be about? Where is it set, you know, who are the characters? What's going on? And then at a certain point, I have an understanding of what the story is, so I write a thing called a cut-to. It's a technique that we picked up from the screenwriters many years ago. Instead of, you know, saying, you know, blah, 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 you say cut-to the next scene, cut-to the next scene. And then in each of those cut-tos, I try to include a character, some kind of conflict, maybe a couple lines of dialogue, a little bit about an object. Because what I have found in my writing and in the writing, good writing that I see, objects have lives the same as characters. In other words, an object can be transformed through a novel. Let me give an example. Have you ever read The Maltese Falcon? It's a Dashiell Hammett novel. A long time ago, it was made into a movie. Well, the first time you see the Maltese Falcon, it's wrapped up in paper and string and it's hidden. The next time you see it, it's stripped of the paper and it's standing there. And the third time you see it, they have scraped off the paint and they realize that it's not what they said it was, but in fact, it's just a lead object. So what you see is the character actually the object has the same life as a character. It develops through time. So when I do the cut two, I do a whole work through of these things. Each scene has a segment that has an object, a character developed, a little bit of conflict, this kind of stuff. And the point of that is to move through the story from beginning to end. So I've developed a technique of actually doing that backwards. I worked for a while with a woman who had written some of the dialogue in the Pink Panther movies. Mm-hmm. And she said that Blake Edwards always wrote his ending first. And he said, okay, now how did I get here? You get to the scene before. How did I get there? See, and most of us think about where we're going to go, we're going to go in a direction. But what this tells us is if you have the thing sealed off at the end, then you work backwards until you get to the beginning, and then you flip it, and then you have a story that everybody recognizes.
Right.
So when I write, I go through three or four phases, you see, and after I do the cut two, which I have a summary of, then I sit down every day that I sit down to write, and I say, today I'm writing the scene about, and then I write the scene. And if I do that on a regular basis in a disciplined way, away from the internet, away from my telephone, away from everything, just shut it off and go to it, I can actually write a book, you know, in a year. When Bob and I did the Weekend Novelist Writes a Mystery, we set out, if you discipline yourself as a writer and you write a scene a day, you have 365 scenes in a year. Well, let's say you take weekends off. What's 5 times, you know, 52? Well, you have a lot of scenes. You only need 50 scenes for a novel or a screenplay.
See, so, but what's interesting is you call everything a scene. See, because I am a screenwriter also, and what happens to me is I do. That's how I look at it, as scenes. I learned from Sid Field, and he said, get those little white cards. And I got the, well, that's how I started writing screenplays. I got the little white cards and the index cards, and you write scene one, you just can write a few words, you write whatever. And so I see things when I'm writing a book as a scene. And even though people call it like a chapter, whatever, I sometimes, it's a scene that I see. And for me, I like to call it scenes because I'm seeing it, and it doesn't have to be like what you're saying, the same thing. It can start off as something, and then like somebody just walks into a coffee shop and talks to somebody. And then even if I don't write it that moment, I can go back to that moment because I already remember
it,
but I've
exactly
written something.
Exactly.
That's how
you
I do
have it
also
in place, you see.
Yeah.
This is the discipline that a lot of young writers don't yet have. I think everybody gets to the same point if they commit themselves to the work and to the writing. We eventually all get to the same place. I sometimes tell writers, look, there's as many ways to write novels as there are novelists. But here are some things that I have found that work for me. Try them. If they work for you, great. If they don't, try something else. Because people, you know, everybody's looking for the magic bullet, Marcia. You know, how do I become a great novelist? Well, you become a great novelist by writing great novels, and the way you write great novels is by learning about story, structure, and style.
Yeah.
You know, story is what moves the story along, structure is the way it's put together, and style is a language. Most writers go to style too early. They go to style right off the bat, and they start working the first 4 lines of their novel. And no, do that later, because it turns out that most story problems are actually structure problems, and most style problems are actually structure problems. So there's a whole sequence that I have developed that I use, and I'm not sure that I can actually pass that on, see, because that's my personal approach to fiction writing.
Right.
Now, when I just did the last book of the quartet, of my California quartet called Trio of Lost Souls, and I was looking at it the other day, and I have 8 different storylines that I worked up in my writing about. You know, I wanted to write a story about this, about that, and so on and so forth. But when I got to the final version, I had stripped out all of those things that were the clutter, and I was left only with what was necessary or essential. So you see, one of the writer's problems is putting in too much, wanting to put in everything. And you can't do that. You can't put in everything, because otherwise you wind up with a 1,500-page book.
Right.
It doesn't have any structure to it. And structure is an elusive word. You know, what in the world is structure? Well, you can easily define, you know, it's the order that the story is presented in. There's a difference between writing
that's a
the
good
story.
Way to, that's a really good, I got to write that down. I like that. Order, that really, order in which the story, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so structure is so important. Most writers don't understand that. See, when you write a scene, I have read a couple of your screenplays. When you write a scene, I can see how you're developing the scene because you have an innate notion of scene structure. Without some sort of sense about the way a scene should work, you know, you're just sort of flailing in the wind.
Yeah.
You know, but if you have an approach to the structure of a scene, then what you see is that the overall novel has a structure, and within each scene there's a structure,
right.
And within each scene it connects to the next scene, and so you have hooks that hook all along. This thing binds it together as though it were a chain of series, and so there are no gaps. Even when you do time jumps or cut twos or dissolve, you still have the thing linked up, so that it becomes an integral, I hate to use the word organic, but you have it becomes an integral piece that has a flow from beginning to end. See, it's all about structure. And most writers think they want to write words. Well, yeah, but words are not the big thing. Sentences are the big thing. And I also ask students often, you know, okay, you write something, I say, okay, what's the story in this sentence? Tell me what this sentence is about. You know, what's going on here? And then what's the story in this paragraph? What's the story in this page? If you can't answer that question, then you do not know the story. The advantage of working the way I do is that when I do that cut too, I have implanted the entire novel in my head, and I can write any scene at any point, in any time, and it will tie into the whole structure. In my rewriting, what I do sometimes is I will be having trouble with a scene, so I'll rewrite it. But when I go back to look at what I have done, the difference between the write and the rewrite is often very minimal because I have been writing from this cut-to thing where the story's embedded. So what I began to see is, oh, this is a style question. You know, it's what the characters say. I have to quit writing in canonical prose. I have to quit writing armored prose and start writing character prose, because dialogue should reveal character. You shouldn't tell the story in the dialogue.
Right. Yeah,
you know, a screenwriter
yeah.
doesn't tell the story in the dialogue. Screenwriter tells the story in the slug line and
yeah.
in the, you know, in the narrative.
Right, what they
so,
have to
okay.
right. So they have
that's
we
my
have a
rap.
Call we
you
have
ask
a call
one question
line.
And you get six answers, right? Okay.
We, yes. Well, you have a good answer for everything. Got to say we have a caller. All right, let me open the line.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, it's Marsha. Who's this?
Excuse me. Hi, Marsha. This is
hi,
Mary.
Hi, how are
Rita.
You? Who is this? Oh, hi, how are you? You have a question?
Hi.
For Jack?
This show is fascinating, I have to say.
Jack
it's
is
like
unbelievable.
Taking a, I hate to say it. I feel like I should pay for this because it's like a class.
Okay. Go ahead. What did you want to ask?
Well, I'm kind of overwhelmed already. Jack, I've really enjoyed hearing what you have to say, and Marsha has known me for a long time. So,
yes.
God, I'm just kind of overwhelmed. It doesn't usually happen when I'm at a loss for words.
Well, because you
anyway,
read a lot. I mean, you read a lot. You are a very avid reader.
I read a lot, but Jack, what I like that you said is we should be reading a lot of different things, not just novel. A lot of nonfiction, and I've been trying to do that. And I think I'm not writing right now. I've been told I should write something, that I might have a book in me, but
I think you do. I think you might have a book in you, and you don't think you do, but you have to let it go, though. See, that's the thing.
It's trying to
you
get
know,
out.
Yeah. You know, if you make little notes, that might help. Jack, how would you suggest, you know, if you're thinking of writing it, is that what
so
you want
much.
To ask? Yeah, were you thinking of asking, like,
well,
how
I think
where you would begin?
Basically, to write, you need to sit down and ignore all the outside interferences.
Wow, yeah.
Because, and then I know that's not a question.
That's hard. That is a question. That is a question, because how can you do that?
The question is, how do you do that?
Easiest,
yeah.
It's not always the easiest thing to do, but I think structure, getting some structure and sitting down and figuring out what you want to do and then setting down to do it and making sure you have good reference material.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I do is every writing session, when I'm writing with my group down at Louisa's, we do that twice a week, There's only one start line. Today I am writing about. Okay, and what you do is, if you can't figure out what you're writing about, then you picked up something from Natalie Goldberg once in Taos. She said, if you can't write about what you're writing about, write about what you don't want to write about. Today, I do not want to write about. But then you're writing about it, you see. And so by writing about what you don't want to write about, you're actually writing about it. And it becomes a wonderful technique. Yeah, it's the back door. Come in the back door. You don't always have to come in the front door.
I think I probably do need to come in the back door.
Yeah, go in. Sit down today when you sign off here. Sit down if you're, you know, writing by hand and say, I do not want to write about, you know, blah, 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 and read it to Marcia, read it to me.
Yep. That's a very good thing.
That is really helpful.
And if you know the ending, which you might know the ending of it, I remember what we talked, you know the ending, and so what your story would be, you go, like Jack is just saying, you know the ending. Mm-hmm. So you start with your ending and move on backwards and you'll get your beginning.
Right, exactly. It's a wonderful technique, you know, and it does give you a sense of, you know, okay, how did I get here, which is very different from where am I going?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm here now, and how did I get here?
I'm already here.
I had one that I write it both forwards and backwards, and then I flip it, and it takes a lot of work, but the discipline involved is a way to get the story in your head. So that so when you're writing the story, it's like you're in the room with the characters. They have done these things, and you're talking to them. I know that sounds insane, but
I had a guest on. I had a guest that said that he had been in the I think it was in the Army, and he was writing stories like that. And he had all his Army buddies, like he felt they were in the room with him writing the story, and that's how he wrote his story, and it was good. But he felt like they were there helping him write that story.
Yeah, I call it taking dictation. You see, I'm just writing what these characters are telling me.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, and another technique that I developed a few years ago was, everybody says, oh, know your audience. Who are you writing this for? Well, I didn't know anybody. So I had a friend named Frank. So I just wrote all my stories to him. I said, dear Frank, today I'm writing to tell you about this story. And first thing you know, I had a whole collection of stories. But tell your story to Marcia. Tell your story to me.
She's heard quite a few of them.
And you do have a very excellent story to tell. And I think because, you know, and you just have to let it come out of you. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get a legal pad. Don't go to the computer. Get a legal pad, pad and just start. And like Jack says, start with your end. You know what your ending is, and then it'll get you to where you need to go.
Yeah.
But you got to start, though. See, what Jack says, that's the thing about
Marcia,
Jack.
I missed the speaker's name.
Mary. Mary. Mary.
Mary?
Yes, Mary Rita. Yeah.
Mary. Okay, Mary. One of the things that I keep telling writers, and sometimes it sinks in and sometimes it doesn't, you know, is when you're telling a story, what you're trying to do, you know, is to put characters in a time and place. You know, people talk about a sense of place all the time, you know. And when we talked to Marcia earlier about a scene structure, you know, every scene, well, let me back up. Okay. When Bob and I wrote The Weekend Novelist Writes a Mystery, we knew how to do the book, but we didn't know exactly how to approach the scene. What do you do when you do a scene first? When you do a scene? The issue was, writing a scene is always an existential exercise, because first there are places, and then the characters come into the place, and when they're in the place, they meet another character, and they talk about the place or what brought them there. Every scene works the same way at that archetypal level, okay? So, see I get wound up when I talk like this. So, forgive me while I back off. You guys talk
no,
a little
it's
bit,
very
will
interesting.
You please?
It's very interesting.
It's really interesting.
I'm wondering if that we. I think we might have another caller on also. But you know, Mary, is there anything you wanted to ask him before you start? Seeing as you're on the line here, I think you should, you know, just get that pad of paper and start writing.
I will continue to listen, but I really appreciate Everything that both of you
I'm glad.
Have been saying.
Right. Thank you so much. If you have another one, just let me know.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Mary.
Let's just see.
Thank you, Chair.
Let's see. I don't want to disconnect Mary. So we'll see. I'm so good at this right now. All right.
You're talking yourself, Marcia.
I am. Yeah. Sorry. No, just stay in. Just all right. All right. Let's see. Hi. We have a caller.
Hi, Marcia.
Oh, hi. Jeff? Hi. Did you want to ask?
It was a very, very bad cold, so my apologies for having a half a voice for you. But I had,
hi.
You know, when it comes to Jack Remick, I always have to call and speak with him and say this, because it happens every time. Jack, every time I hear you speak, I learn more and more about the craft of writing, and it helps me improve my own work, and you're just a gem.
Isn't he incredible? I mean, he is. I mean, he really is. He makes you want to write, and that's one of the reasons I love having him on, because when he talks, you listen. That's just the way it is, you know. See,
also,
Jack,
wonderful, open and warm and kind man on top of that. He's,
yeah.
You know, he's the whole package. You're such a gem. It's been wonderful. I'm going to be dashing around.
All right, okay, thank you. All right, thank you so much for calling in. All right, you
get better,
Peg, you
Jeff. I hope you get better quick.
Thank you, Jack.
Yeah, right. Feel good.
Thank you.
All right, see, look, you know, I see the interesting part about you, Jack, is that you don't realize how people really wait to hear what your words are, because what you inspire people to write, because you have a technique, and most of us, you know, the techniques you have, you explain, and we might have these techniques, we just don't put them into words, and you do, you know. I know you probably don't want to do this, but if you'd write a book,
tell you what, Marcia,
you should write a book about this. You should write a book about all your techniques.
Why don't you send me that jar of ego balm, and I'll just spread it on me every morning.
Should I sell that?
I love to hear you say that, but see, the whole thing in my world is, you know, well, Bob and I built this website, and the subtitle, are you there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the subtitle is How to Make Good Writing Better, because we have always felt that every writer, Mary said she thought she had a book in her, well, I think she does too. But what you need to do is find some way to latch onto something that will get you into the sentence. You know, it is the sentence that really matters. You know, when I wrote Gabrielle and the Widow, I mean, I had, where do I start the book? The year the war ended, Gabriella led her sick mother down off the mountain. All right, well, I've got everything I need to know. If I unpack that single sentence, I get the whole novel. Okay, so what I'm suggesting is a way, and let me sell my website for a minute. Bob,
yeah, and I want you to hear what I want
blog.
You to also give some of your links. I also have Bob and Jack. I actually have that, you know, on our website, on our blog talk page, so they can go, because you answer questions and you have so many articles on that. So
yeah,
it's Bob and Jack's, you know.
Right. Bob and Jack's
writing blog.
Everybody, if you just go look at that, you know, what we have done is take everything we know about how to put a scene together, how to put a book together, how to draw a character, how to build it through time. It's all on there, and it's free of charge, you know, because we learned it from other people, and we are passing it on to other people. So please, you know, feel free to go investigate the stuff up there on that blog. I know a lot of writers
so much? Do you think because you know a lot of things that other writers don't know or know and don't know how to vocalize it, that inhibits your writing sometimes? Because sometimes I think if I, you know, when I used to write before, I didn't think about so many things, you know, and I just wrote. How do you feel about that?
Well, part of it, Marcia, if you look at writing as a physical discipline, all right, that's why I write by hand, because it keeps me connected to the page, it keeps me connected to the word. The computer is really great for rewriting and reorganizing, but it's not worth a damn for doing the work, because I lose the context. Now,
it's
when
what,
I write by hand,
I agree.
When I write by hand, I do not know what I have written until I go home and dictate it into the computer.
Yeah.
I do not know, because when you say knowing everything inhibits your writing, well, if you think about, do you ever watch a baseball game on television or in life live?
Yes.
If you see these guys, they do these miraculous things with their bodies. They are not thinking about that. You do not see, however, the 4,000 times that they took that play in practice.
Right. Yeah.
So writing is a physical process exactly like playing baseball. And if you read those things and you internalize those things, then you do not think about them when you're writing. They just happen. But first you have to put them into the hopper. You have to internalize it so it becomes a part of your living, writing, breathing life as a writer. You know, I know how a scene works, so I've got some problems here, but I know how the scene works. I know how dialogue works. I know the structure of this chapter, whatever it is. See, if you internalize it first, then when you sit down to write, you don't think. Think first and then write. You know, there's a saying that I think that Boileau, who was a French artist and back in the 18th, 17th century, he said, avant d'écrire, apprenez à penser. Before writing, learn to think. Well, what he's telling you is think first and then write.
Yeah.
Don't think as you write.
I think when you go to the computer, I think it's a different way of writing. I think you go to the true thoughts when you write on paper. And when I write it down on, you know, when I write notes, it's just a bare thought, and then I build on it. But it's something that will automatically, like I could be blow drying my hair, let's say, and I go like, oh my God, I thought of this, and then I go write it down really quick, and you know, because that's how I put my story together, bits by bits, and different pieces. I do not sit down and just write my whole story. That would be nice, but it's not going to happen. I go like, all of a sudden, I'm seeing something. I go, oh, I think like Virginia does this. Or Victoria does this, and it just comes to my head, and those are thoughts that make up my books, and then I elaborate.
Well, think of it this way: you know, if you write by hand, it becomes an economics. You know what we know. Let me give you an example. If you have $1 and you lose 10 cents, you've lost 10% of your assets. If you have $1 million and you lose a dollar, well, you don't even feel it. Well, words are the same way. The more words you have, the less valuable any one of them becomes. And so what you do when you write by hand is you're writing in the most economical way. You can think of it as compressed or packed up, you know, or jammed in there. So each word in a sentence that you write by hand can be exploded into many other words. See, and that's the value of writing by hand. It becomes a compression, you know, and sometimes you don't know what's in there until you start working it. You know,
and sometimes with a character, I don't know, with a character, I have been, one of the things that I have done, which, you know, does help me, if I'm really wanting to get into the character, I write my character, like I make them write a diary, you know, and some side of a diary or a letter. Where sometimes when you're writing a letter, you say things that you may normally not say, and, you know, to the person or whatever. And this way, sometimes when I wrote my book, Love Changes, I couldn't figure out why why my main character did certain things. And by writing letter that she wrote, I figured it out. And sometimes a letter's very personal, so it gets you to the place you need to get into your character to understand why they do things. Maybe it's not great what they did. It wasn't, but there's a reason, you know.
Yeah. Well,
and it could be why my friends say it. But one of the things my friends say to me in general life, because I do have a habit of making excuses. If somebody does something bad or what, not that great, I'll go, well, his mother is sick or this one's, I always look inside the whole picture, not just what they did at that moment. It's probably because how I write. Because it's not always at that moment. Sometimes somebody does something that's not great, but why did they do it?
Well,
you
see,
know,
Marcia, one of the things that I have learned is that the good writer writes much, much more than ever shows up in the final book. Stuart Stern told us when Bob and I were teaching in that screenwriting program, he said he knows people who write a 300-page treatment for a 90-page screenplay because they're exploring the secrets of the characters, they're exploring the situation. One of the things that came out of that whole sequence that we worked was every character has to have a deeper wish. And when you write that letter about, you are exposing the deeper wish of the character because the character is in you and she has become part of your life. And so she is sharing her secrets with you. So you don't necessarily have to write that secret into the into the story, but you know it's there. It's underneath. It's like the hidden statues in the cathedrals in France. You never see them because they're up in the clerestory, you know, but they are there and they're works of art. And so what you do by writing that personal letter is you're actually peering into the brain of your character. And what a wonderful way to approach character. That's delightful. You know, I had
You know, she was one of my favorite characters because, you know, people, you know, they felt that, you know, she did some things that weren't exactly right, but she did have her reasons for doing them. And to me, it was so interesting to learn about her. But I did, you know, she was, that's why sometimes when you're saying it takes a while to write a book, it does take a while because you should know your character and feel, even in a character that's not the nicest person, they have to have something that they did that was good.
This brings me to a really important stage in the development of a writer. I know many, many writers who have written that first book on energy and adrenaline and gallons of coffee. Well, what do you do when you get to the second novel? You know what I mean? I mean, you have to, you know, each time, instead of becoming easier, damn it becomes harder. Because each time you're making the demand on yourself as a writer harder and more difficult, and you're writing books that are not easy. And to me, this is the way you grow as a writer, which gets to a dangerous place, because what happens when you just start writing to satisfy that need to go beyond instead of satisfying the need to meet the reader's story? If you, you know, this is a danger. If you become, you know, too difficult as a writer, you sort of pace yourself out of your audience, because not many people want to spend the kind of time that it takes to go into those deeper places that you're trying to get to with the book. You know, this is the, I feel this, you know, every time I start a new book, I think, oh, I can't do it the same way. If I do it the same way, I'm cheating myself in my development as a writer. But at the same time, if your readers don't know what you're doing, you know, they sometimes disengage and they don't come back. So,
when you're writing something, like when I wrote Grand Central Station, now I did the screenplay 3 or 4 times. I rewrote it a million times, but I mean 3 or 4 times, actual different ways. And this is the last way that I didn't use notes from my screenplay because I just used what I had in my head, and in this particular, when I wrote the book, I found out a lot of little things that I didn't know, and it made me like the relationships with the characters a lot more than I did as a screenplay, even though it's still short. But I felt like I got some of the better parts of them that I didn't have in the screenplay, because you don't have time in a screenplay to do that. You just have to get to, you know, that's how screenplay is. But I will say, you know, you are so entertaining, and I learned a lot, and I got all these notes written down. But, you know, I hope you'll come on again, and glad it was just you and me this time, and we just got to really talk. And, you know, Mary, I thank Mary for calling and for Gail for being in there and asking questions. I think, you know, that's what makes it so interesting when you hear someone like you talk, though. I mean, do you want to give your website so we don't forget that?
Okay, I have two. One is called Bob and Jack's writingblog.com, and the other is just jackremick.com. That one has all of my novels and all that kind of stuff, and you know.
And you could go to Amazon because you have a lot of books, and I know you're one of the authors like myself We don't talk about all the books that we've done, but, you know, because you and I both like to just talk about these subjects, you know.
Yeah.
So, but Jack Remick has a lot of books, and he's on Amazon, and he's a
well,
very interesting guy to watch. You have videos on yourself on your site, so yes, you know, and I hope you'll come on again really soon. You know, I would hear you all the time because you're so interesting, but, you know, I know you're a busy guy, but I so thank
well,
you
look,
so
you
much.
And, you and Jeff can tell me when I start repeating myself, and then I won't come on
you
your
show. You have never
anymore.
Done that. You have never done that, and actually, I should say that I'm going to be on Delaney's show in a few minutes. She's got a show from Red River, which is where I started from Red River. I haven't been on a show in 2 years. I think she put me on it like after 4, I think. I just found that out, but I'll be listening on her show. She has a really good show. Delaney Oaks, she's been on my show also, but she has really good shows. And we all learned from April Robin, and we had a great time when we were all together. So we're at least all friends, but I'm going to be reading, which I don't like to do. We'll be doing
okay.
it. For, and
right.
thank you again.
Okay, thanks,
have
Marcia.
A great
thanks
day.
For having
thank
me.
You.
And
say hello
all
to
the
Bob and ask Bob if he tell Bob he's welcome anytime.
Okay. I will do that.
Okay, thank
take care
you.
Of yourself, and we'll talk
you too.
To you soon.
Thank
bye-bye.
You so much. Bye-bye.